Welcome back, everybody. Kevin, welcome to the meeting. Thanks very much. Are you ready to go?
I am. Thank you, Mason.
Okay, the floor is yours. Thanks very much.
Great. Thanks. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate the opportunity to share the fiscal year 11 operating plan and budget, the framework for that fiscal year 11 ops plan and budget. This group is has to be one of the most sophisticated community members that's been engaged with this process over the years. So I'll zip through the slides and just highlight a couple of points. First of all, this for those of you who might be new, this kicks off the opportunity for the community to shape and create the operating plan and budget. This is not intended to be a proposed final budget in which you can react to. This is designed and intentionally meant to have community feedback. So you want to go to the next slide? So the highlights are that this follows the strategic plan, as Rod and discussed earlier. The strategic plan has been simplified with those four key strategic areas, and so it follows both chronologically, the strategic plan being adopted, as well as structurally. We've tried to capture that in those areas. We've for the last 3 years we've posted this framework at this time, which marries the operating plan and budget at this meeting in the February timeframe. So the intention is to get that feedback for 4 or 5 months, as opposed to later on, where there's not an opportunity to adjust the big dials. The framework that we propose for allows for some growth in security, stability, and resiliency, IANA. Core infrastructure and operations, DNSSEC project, obviously, some policy improvements, and IT infrastructure. It also allows for significant resources to complete the GTLD program, although if you look at the year-on-year, you'll see that the actual spend, just because the GTLD program is essentially many items have been completed, there's actually a decline in the percentage, although there's still dollar amounts in there. And then for those who might be new, the 17th of May is my next magic key milestone date, in which per the bylaws, the draft operating plan and budget gets posted. And then we open it up for more community feedback for this final 5 or 6 weeks up to the time the final budget is submitted to the board in Brussels. Okay, next slide. So this slide really highlights that point that we allow for plenty of time for feedback and the key milestones. Next slide. This really emphasizes the point I mentioned earlier, that we have the four strategic areas and we've aligned the operating plan and budget that way. I want to emphasize, too, I know this is a real abbreviated version of this, and tomorrow at 2 p.m., I'd really encourage all of you remotely, as well as those of you here in Nairobi, to join that meeting if at all possible. I think, and not because I want you to hear the 25-minute version of this, it's because there's a lot of different groups in the community that are coming together to discuss that. And as you'll see, we want your feedback and involvement in this process to adjust the major dials in the operating plan and budget, which makes sure that we're landing correctly. And there's nothing more helpful than to have each of the groups in the same room at the same time to discuss that. So, next slide. This is a budget background. I think most of you are familiar with the historical trends of ICANN's finances, which have grown. The revenue stream has grown significantly, up to about $65 million next year. This fiscal year 11, though, is a much declining percentage. So we're seeing, with the .com contract stabilized, the step-ups are complete. We expect the revenue to be growing just at a smaller amount. That being said, there's still significant requirements to execute on the operating plan and the strategic priorities. So this gives us an opportunity to adjust those balances to make sure that we're prioritizing correctly. So the framework is set up that to show that, to allow the community to provide feedback on whether we're adjusting correctly. We of course welcome comments on the post-draft framework in detail, and we've already received a lot of detailed comments and questions requesting more information or requesting more clarity on various items or requesting more spend in certain areas. But we'd also start with, did we hit the major dials right? Have we hit the right balance? So the challenge for fiscal year 11 is to prioritize existing and new work in this low revenue climate. Okay, next slide. This really just highlights what I've already mentioned. You can see the details. It's my poor eyes can't even read that, so you have to look at the document to get the specific numbers. Happy to go through that in more detail tomorrow or in a subsequent meeting. Next slide. And this really just shows how we, in the framework, working with the Board Finance Committee, have come up with what we believe is the a good framework for the balance between revenue, operating expenses, allowing for prudent contingency, and still allowing $2 million to be contributed to reserve fund, which, by the way, is now at $46 million, if those of you haven't tracked it on the dashboard. Okay, next. That's actually one of the questions. I'm seeing the smiles around the table. The other groups I've been in have been very pleased with that number, so I look forward to talking about that with the cross groups tomorrow. But one of the comments in the requests in this framework is we really like your feedback and ideas and suggestions on what is the right amount. Historically, we've been trying to grow up to the reserve fund to be 1 year of operations. We'd like to become more sophisticated on that, saying, well, what is the right amount for that, and actually come up with a number and a stronger methodology for doing that. The last slide here is just that there's multiple views of the budget. The community, the registrars, registries, and the CEs all have really, really requested various views of the budget, and so we've done that. We've received lots of community feedback on those views, and we'd like to encourage that. We'll plan on continuing to show different views of the budget in response to what community requirements would like to do. And we'll also increase our sophistication in cost accounting and address those things. Okay? Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Tim Cole?
Yeah, I just wanted to augment one of the things that Kevin talked about on the multiple views. Every one of us on staff now, when we submit any kind of expense report or approve any invoices or anything, have a series of codes that we have to put on every single expenditure. And it goes not only into what department gets charged or what meeting it might be associated with, but it also goes into things like which segment of the community is it designed to address or affect, which significant initiative is associated with it. So I have to say that it's been a real learning curve and a real adjustment for us, but I think has made a tremendous difference and certainly has a great improvement in how adequately we're really reporting where the money's going.
Thanks, Tim. Just to leverage off that, we recently, working with the Board Finance Committee and the Board Audit Committee, posted a cost accounting guideline as well as a procurement guidelines, and I posted a blog. I imagine many people missed it with all the other active blogs going on. But if you'd like to provide feedback to those, we'd welcome that. I know the Finance Committee and Audit Committee would welcome those comments as well. And then I had one. If I have one more minute, great. I'm doing
yes,
well.
Please.
I have one really important.
Actually,
important question, which we established precedence, I think, 2 years ago and updated last year, which is I'd like to give the registrar constituency our underlying assumption data. I think it's too much detail for the actual document, but we'd like to provide the transaction volume data and get your feedback on did we adjust, you know, do we put in the right estimates? We had roughly 6 or 7% growth of transaction volume year over year, and we have other assumptions based on renewal of applications and new applications. So I think if that's okay, I'd like to send that to you, Mason, and Jeff and Stefan, to get your feedback from the constituency to make sure we're estimating that correctly. Likewise, I think you'll be pleased. We're making significant effort at requesting revenue estimate validation from the CEs, from the RARs, as we've been doing with the contracted side of the house as well. So I think you're seeing that the benefit of that by having closer and closer estimates on the forecasts for the, on the revenue
okay.
side.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Kevin. So in the queue we have McKaylee, then Jeff Ackhouse, then John. McKaylee.
Hi, how are you doing? Just a couple of things, and thanks for taking the time to go through all this with us. One or two things that are kind of obvious questions, I suppose, for us from the registrar side. We see ICANN having budget overruns and ever expanding and spending more money left, right, and center, while, in many respects, we're the ones who are actually funding a lot of that. So the obvious question that I'd have is, what does ICANN plan to do in terms of keeping its costs curbed while also making sure that money does go to the areas such as compliance which need those funds? And the other question, which is kind of a follow-on from that, if you look at the number of registrars that have lost their accreditation over the last 12 months and the amount of money that they owed to ICANN, I think the rough number I came up with, something close to about $500,000 was owed. So the thing is, why should we all be paying for that?
Yeah, so let me address the first question, which I think is, how are we addressing to make sure that we're not trying to figure out what the appropriate language is, but not overspending, not being responsible, being good fiduciary stewards of these funds. I mentioned the cost accounting guidelines, the procurement guidelines. 2 years ago, we added the disbursement guidelines. So we are getting more and more sophisticated in our forecasting and our ability to control costs and making sure that we're only spending money in the right way. You alluded to we are experiencing budget pressure for this fiscal year. We've had some unanticipated costs, or at least the amount of of those costs have been unanticipated, with legal costs and some other costs, board approved items, for example, security for the Nairobi meeting. So we are experiencing budget pressures, and we have made an initial effort at cost containment with more coach travel and only looking at essentials, consulting contracts, etc. With the clear proviso that we don't cut essential services. So we've been working on that. We plan on continuing to work on that to make sure that we are good stewards of our funds. We'd like your feedback, obviously, on are we hitting the right balance. It's not going to help to over control costs, but at the same time, I think that this is an opportunity. Those of us in the finance management side of ICANN secretly have been pleased with this exercise, because it helps ICANN grow up and be even more sophisticated in our cost containment, as many organizations, many around the table and on the phone know. It's important to spend funds wisely. And so that's a thought on there. I lost the second question. Could you say the second question again? A keyword?
I was asking about monies owed to ICANN registrars who have lost their accreditation. Basically, I don't see why, not you personally, but I don't see why I should be paying for somebody else who hasn't, who had never paid their bills.
Yes, that's that actually was a loud outcry. I think maybe the year before I started. I know there was, we hadn't had a formal collections policy, or it wasn't evolved like it should be, and so we put that in. Those who read the audited financials in detail will see we actually had a pickup in our bad debt expense, a credit in the bad debt expense, which has been always interesting to explain to people as they look at that. But so our collection ability, and I'm looking around the table, has improved dramatically over the last few years. And obviously there are there's a bad debt expense. There's a certain percentage of registrars and registries that don't pay their bills or don't pay them on time. With the new RAA and enforcement policies being stronger and stronger, I think you'll feel more and more comfortable that you're paying your fair share, and there aren't that we're not leading bad actors, you know, out there to rest on your coattails.
Okay, McKaylee, thanks. I want to quickly move through some of these questions because we're starting to overlap on Pam's time. So
okay.
It's going to be Jeff, and then John, and then Tom Barrett. Jeff, go ahead.
Thanks. Kevin, I had a question if you could just clarify something. I thought that this is relating to the contingent fund and the amount, or the reserve fund, I thought in the past, after we had brought it up, I think in a meeting a couple of years ago, you had said that ICANN was seeking some advice, or I guess I won't say professional help because that brings up a bad connotation, but on how much that would be and what's appropriate for a nonprofit in your state. And now, I guess today you said you're still looking for some guidance on that. Did you guys not engage anybody, or is that still to be a task to be done?
No, yeah, we definitely did engage, and they that's the number with 1 year of operating, and we, you know, I think we talked about the actual results of that study. I think the Board of Finance Committee has asked us to look more closely at this, and staff has thinks it's wise to be clear on what does a rainy day fund mean, what kinds of events would trigger that. What would be access? How you know, what are essential services? So we just, it's just, I think the next step of evolution on that.
Okay, I'm sorry, John.
Thanks. Let me compliment you first, Kevin, on this proposed budget. And it's very clear, and it gives us good guidance, and so thank you. I had a couple quick questions. One is, what are the annual operating expenses of ICANN if you take out new TLD efforts?
For FY11, it'd be $53 million, $54 million, something like that.
Okay, so if you're shooting for the 1 year, you're still, from your position, $8 million shy. If you look at it that way. How do you operate for a year? Because the new TLD program is supposed to be self-funding, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right,
yeah. And then in 5.1 on page 27 of your document, you talk about registrar fees. You say there'll be 18 cents for those who signed an RAA. So that's a continuation of last year's fees for the – so the benefit that we got for signing the RAA early, you're continuing. So thank you for that. The question is, what are those – registrars who haven't signed the RAA going to pay, because it doesn't say what it is. Is it the full 25 cents, or is it what it was last year?
Obviously, this is a framework that's unbaked, and it's up to community feedback. But my understanding is we'll continue that on, that they would be at 20 cents. And I don't know if we've fully discussed that. It's not fully discussed, and we'd like to, actually, that'd be a good place to get feedback on that.
Okay. How many registrars haven't signed? What's the percentage?
Right now, the percentages that I have are based on number of registrants covered, and we're right around 91 or 92%. But that there's still, you know, a couple hundred registrars that haven't signed. But, I mean, the vast majority, at least in terms of registrants, have.
Yeah,
it'd obviously be more incentive the bigger the discount, but, yeah, that's – for other folks to talk about. And then my last thing is, you know, you talked about your blog. You talked about I see all the wonderful reports that you guys prepare, and this document is 30-something pages. Has the pendulum swung too much to, you know, we always wanted a lot of information. Has it swung too much that you guys are preparing a lot of things that people aren't taking advantage of, or do you think it's the right balance?
I think thanks for the question, John. I think it's starting to swing. It's really up to the community, of course, as a deliverer of those reports and wondering what the impact of those is. I tend to think that maybe we're hitting the right balance. That being said, we're a service, you know, finance especially is a service organization. We have very high standards of accountability and transparency. And so whenever we hear a blogger, a question, or a concern that we're not open and transparent enough, I go back to, well, let me put the general ledger up on the website. So I think I'd like really, and I've tried to put that in the document, really like feedback on what kinds of views of ICANN's budget and financial information is of value, and maybe we can start reducing some of the reports that just aren't being used very much, but at one point were requested. So I think that would be a helpful way to save costs and, you know, at least for the finance department, be more efficient in doing that. Likewise, I know there's also, I just came out of a meeting with the business constituency. They really wanted more detail in certain areas to help them make decisions on how to prioritize. So we, of course, want to encourage that. So I'd say the answer is probably it's about right. There's probably some things that could come off, and then we'd identify certain reports and analyses that you'd like to have to help. Okay? Thank you for that. Mason,
okay, John, thanks.
Mason, anything more?
Right. Tom Barrett. Tom, go ahead.
I have a question about the registrars who owe overdue balances to ICANN. Is there a way to get more transparency to who those are?
On who the registrars are that owe more?
Correct.
Yeah. I think that's in our general thoughts. We're having a meeting with the Finance Committee on the reports required, and that's one area where I know as a CFO I'm very interested in my balance sheet. There's not a whole lot of information on the balance sheet out on the website, including accounts receivable and details on that. So I'm going to take that as a request, and hopefully you can formalize that in some of your comments, that I think it makes sense to do that. I don't know the sensitivities to that, but we'll work through that to make sure that we're open and fair and accountable and transparent.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Any other last minute questions? I know Kevin's got to be moving on, and we need to get Pam into place here to talk to us about compliance.
Just
any other questions?
Mason, if I could just close.
Okay.
Thank you very much for letting me present. And as I said, I'd really encourage you to join the open forum tomorrow at 2 p.m. in Nairobi time. It's probably an ungodly time in Washington, D.C. But I know the registrar constituency has always provided a very valuable feedback on that. The open forum is open before the draft budget is open till April 1st and then after that. So really encourage you to provide that, and really have appreciated your contributions, obviously in terms of revenue, but also in terms of making this process work as well as it is and better. Okay? Thank you so much.
Very good, Kevin. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. All right. Pam Little, are you set and ready, or do you need a moment?
Yes, I'm ready. So long as Tim is going to change my status.
There you are.
Thanks.
Okay, give us a moment to get your slides up.
Okay, Mason, Pam has asked me to introduce her, and so while we're getting her slides up, Pam Little is, I think, the newest addition to our compliance team still. She is a senior director. She's based out of our Sydney office. She and I have had a very successful round of visits to registrars in China a couple months ago, And I think you'll find that her grasp of a lot of these issues and her willingness to reach out to you and learn more about the concerns of the registrars is a good one. So we're still waiting for the slides to show up, but Pam, maybe you can give a little bit about your background so that they know where you're coming from.
Okay, thanks for that introduction, Tim. Hi, everyone. I'm the newest addition to the team. I joined ICANN in August last year. I used to practice law as an in-house lawyer for major telco, then the Australian Stock Exchange until last year. I'm still learning, so Tim has hinted, so just be gentle with me, please. Now, I've been asked to give you a brief update or short presentation on the FY initiatives contractual compliance has, and a very quick update on the recent NORCUIS accuracy study. So here on this slide, I thought for those of you who haven't seen this slide on ICANN's dashboard, there's a compliance icon. You can actually go and follow this. This is updated on a monthly basis. But I just thought this slide will give you a good picture of what's happening with contractual compliance activity at ICANN. And maybe 2003, if you see the first one, when the first year when we started to track this type of data, there was a very high percentage of termination and number. I really don't know what happened that in that year. Perhaps there was a delinquency, mass delinquency, therefore mass termination. But after 2003, you can see the figures were pretty flat until 2008 and 2009. So they really grew significantly. And I think that can be probably explained that there wasn't a ICANN contractual compliance department until very late in 2006 when my colleague Stacey Burnett started the whole contractual compliance department. And then I guess it took her a while to, you know, get their program going. And then 2008, we have two new staff members, and I joined ICANN last year. So I thought this will give you a good snapshot of the how life has changed for registrars in the last few years, if you like. Okay, next one. And with this one, although my main point will be talking about the new initiatives, but I just sort of give you a bit of update in terms of the recent enforcement activities. These are figures sort of self-explanatory. We had in the last 4 months, between November 2009 and February 2010, we actually have 9 terminations or non-renewal. Sorry? Okay, and we have 56 breach notices sent to registrar. That was just, I got an update last night, that was actually 58 now. And so 612 enforcement notices and over 4,000 consumer complaints processes, just to share. And if you read this line from the bottom bullet point to the top, then you probably could understand the flow of our compliance work. So we detect non-compliance from consumer complaints, and we determine whether we need to take escalated compliance actions. And then if we do, we send enforcement notices, breach notices, and if that doesn't work, we terminate the registrar. Next one. These are the common grounds under which we terminate registrar's accreditation agreement. One of them is registrar failed to comply with RDE deposit. So for this audience, I assume you all know what that is. And the registrar failed to meet their WHOIS obligations, which they are few under the RAA. And also the common ground, or most common ground, is registrar who don't pay their bills. I think during Kevin's presentation, Michaela raised this issue, and we are proactively going after those who have financial delinquencies. The last bullet point I just want to mention briefly, this is also one of the reason now we have registrar termination, and it's a voluntary termination, and I think it's actually not a bad thing. When registrar find out that their business is no longer viable, or they really don't want to continue that relationship, don't want to continue their accreditation through our maybe merger or acquisition, I think this will be the best outcome for both parties. For example, we could probably have better chance of getting paid, and we also have less hassles in arranging bulk transfer, because usually in these sort of cases, registrar tend to be more cooperative than a sort of hostile termination by ICANN. Next one, this is a 2009 RIA enforcement tool. I think that came up in this morning, one of the morning session, about what compliance is going to do about those new tools. Is that making noise?
Yeah, okay.
So we are going to fully intend to use those new tools, if you like. Although I think the issue raised this morning as a response to the law enforcement proposed RAA amendments seem to be, to me, different to what these new enforcement tools will do. I thought the proposed amendments by the law enforcement group were more about use of domain names, while these RAA, the new enforcement tools, really are still restricted to dealing with registrars, i.e. registration of domain names. So I'm not sure whether these new tools themselves will be a good enough, sufficient rebuttal to those law enforcement's proposed changes. So there are a few new tools we can use, and I'm in the next slide or next two slides down, I will explain how we're going to use those new tools. So, for example, audit rights, we're now going to introduce that or use that new tool in the IRTP audit we are intending to carry out through 2010. And it's another new tool, suspension of registrar's ability to create new registration and inbound transfers. We haven't used that, but I think once we carry out the IRTP audits, we might just try that. We may also try to recover ICANN's enforcement costs from registrars who are non-compliant. And the enforcement of registrar group liability, I think we started to do that in terms of a merger situation, and we actually have very good outcome from that. The next slide is the data escrow. I just want to give you a quick update. It's not a new program, but they just, in terms of where we are, with data depositing obligations, we actually have now 821 registrars. Again, that's an update I got last night from my colleagues. So that translates to approximately 99% of registration data being escrowed at the moment. And we also have, out of 940 registrars, as of 1st of March, there are 79 registrars who do not have domain names registrations. Therefore, their obligation to deposit data doesn't kick in until they have domain names. We do have a small number of registrars who have signed the tripartite escrow agreement but haven't started depositing the data. We also have a small number who haven't even signed the tripartite agreement. We are working on those and trying to help those registrars to become compliant. The second point of the RDE obligation is really, or RDE program, is about data auditing. Having the data deposit is one thing, but to make sure the data is good, that in case we need to access the data, so we actually have Iron Mountain help ICANN design this audit application called IDES. But we recently had a four-day meeting with Iron Mountain in their office in Georgia, and we actually had the chance to review how IDES as an application is working and how those audit reports mean. And at the moment, we do find the audit reports do not correlate to the quality of the data. So we're working with Iron Mountain actively on potential modifications and enhancements of the system. And once that's done, we hope we could then make use of the new system's reports and then take enforcement action from those report outcome audit results. Next slide is about a new audit we intend to carry out throughout the rest of the year. We had the help of some of the key registrar representatives looking at these early draft of this audit plan. When will we do this? We intend to do three rounds of audits throughout the rest of the year. I anticipate probably the first month we will be rolling this out will be May. I was hoping April, but given other priorities and time constraint, I think May will be more realistic time frame. And there will be three rounds of monthly audits. We'll be using we'll be only auditing transfers of domain names in .com. And though, as you guys know, there are lots of names get transferred each month, and lots of registrars involved in terms of gaining and losing registrars. So it is really not feasible to do a comprehensive audit. So the audit mechanism at the moment as designed is actually just to random audits. So there will be three groups of registrars who will be audited on. First group will be those transfer-losing registrars whose NAC rate exceeds 20%. We'll take the monthly transactional data from VeriSign's monthly report and work out the registrars who fall within that category. And the second category of registrars who will be audited on will be transfer-gaining registrars whose NAC rate exceeds 40%. The last category will be registrars who generate most complaints in that given month, the top five. And those who are... Sorry?
There's a question from Jeff and then also James. I wondered if we could just pause for a minute and let them do that.
No, I was okay waiting. It was in general, but I don't know. How many slides do you have left?
Not too many.
I'm okay letting her finish. I'll defer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if James, if you want to ask now or.
Okay, so I'll just.
Okay, James would like to go ahead with a quick question.
Sure.
Hi, Pam. This is James. With the section number 3, top 5 registrars subject to complaint, is that going to be adjusted for scale?
No, that won't be. The scale, we thought, would have been addressed within categories 1 and 2. This will be just absolute number.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Pam. Go ahead.
No problem. Those registrars who are selected to be ordered on will receive order notice, and that's one of the enforcement tools we said we will use. We will invoke this provision or ability to carry out orders, give you 15 days notice, then seeking information and materials to demonstrate you are compliant with the RTP. Then we also intend to use other enforcement tools I just mentioned earlier in the earlier slide, and we also consider we might publish the order results. This slide, I just want to mention there are some communications or publications available on ICANN website. You can subscribe to our quality newsletter so you can keep track of what we're doing and tell us how we're doing, make suggestions and feedback. I also want to mention since I came on board, as Tim kindly introduced, we feel some of the compliance issues, especially in the Asia-Pacific region, maybe is a result of ignorance or needing sort of more education on our part. So we're trying to reach out to registrar more. These are some of the things we have done. We reach out and met registrars, and we actually visit their physical offices, and that is a very time-consuming and also expensive exercise, but we thought that was important for us to do, to understand registrar's business, understand the operation. And we'll continue to do that if budget permits. Next one. So I'm just going to very briefly touch upon Hui's study. You guys probably all know it's posted on ICANN website on the 15th, and there is a 60-day comment period. So please, if you have any comments, suggestion, feedback, make your voice heard, please put in your comment. And there would also be a workshop at ICANN Brussels meeting in June, and NORC, the research house, Jenny Kelly, will be there running the workshop with my colleague. And this is just very briefly, you can all read this, is that the criteria used by NORC when they did the study to establish whether the data is accurate or not. Next one. And these are the findings in terms of the accuracy of the data. That's all in the report, so it's self-explanatory. So next slide, Tim. And this one, I just put it there just to say, you know, it really, people have different expectations of the level of accuracy, and depending on which angle you're looking at things, maybe if you look at a bottle half full, you can say almost half of the domain names have accurate WHOIS information. and then a borderline 25%, that's 8% of total failure. So I think there are some suggestions or comments made in that report in terms of how we can improve accuracy level, and that's, I guess, something for the community to consider. So that's all I have to share with you today. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to take some. I'm not sure whether I could answer all the questions, but I'll do my best.
All right. Thank you, Pam.
No worries.
Jeff?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Pam. I actually have two distinct questions. One of them actually is sort of a follow-up for James's question. I don't know, Tim, if you could go back to that slide on the audit. Yeah, the IRTP audit. Why the decision on the top five registrars who are subject to complaints and not adjusted to scale? It makes it seem that, you know, we're the second largest registrar in terms of domain names, and just on that number, we would have a high number of complaints, and not being adjusted, you're basically sort of penalizing people of an audit just for being successful.
Jeff, I guess you can look at it from that perspective, but you can also say being the biggest or bigger doesn't mean you will be having more complaints. You could have the best practice, therefore have very minimal complaints.
Oh no, I understand that, but what happens is just on a pure volume level, we're just going to have a high number of complaints. Even if we have, you know, say we have 5% of the domains have complaints, that's still going to be a lot higher than some registrars that have 75% that are going to be complaints and will be audited and have to go through this process, while the ones who are maybe problem registrars are going to go free because they have a smaller amount of, in aggregate, of domain names.
Okay, I'll take that comment on board, Jeff. As I said, this is I was tasked to draft the audit plan, and it's actually near sort of final draft, and if you feel that is a strong concern to you or issue to you, I'm happy to take that offline and maybe see what, you know, suggestion you might have. I'm happy to fine-tune, tweak the audit plan that will be fair and equitable to all registrars.
Okay, thank you.
James?
Jeff had a second question.
Oh, Jeff, did you have a follow-up?
I'll wait till the other questions are asked, and then I'll put my hand back up.
Okay, James?
Just wanted to thank Jeff for stating what I had said. Mr. Giza had run a similar analysis of in one of the working groups, and we saw a completely different picture of the data once we adjusted the rate of complaints by registrations under management. In fact, the top 10 registrars that were receiving complaints read like the top 10 in terms of market share. As soon as you adjusted it for scale, it painted a completely different picture of where the problem children were with regard to transfers. So I'd encourage you to take a look at what David prepared. A lot of this data may be even duplicative from what data David prepared for IRTPB. But my question was with regard to the Who Is Accuracy slide that you had with your last slide with a very colorful chart. I'm wondering if you can go back with that. Well, I think it's your very last slide, that one. So, you know, you made the statement about accurate, borderline, and inaccurate, and I thought that the study was referring to names as valid or invalid, and with the idea being that invalid names, it was unable to determine whether or not it was accurate, not necessarily that it was known to be inaccurate. And I know it's a minor distinction, but I just wanted to get that cleared up.
I think that would then be not completely accurate. Those domain names that satisfy all the three criteria will be counted as will fall within the 23%. And my understanding is those that satisfy only two out of the three will be 24%. Or if you relax those three criteria that set out in the as a methodology to assess accuracy or non-accuracy.
Okay, so we have four actually in the queue, and then I think we're going to need to cut it because we're getting up very close on time here.
Sure.
So we're going to go to Bruce first, and then Michaela, then Matt, then Jeff. So Bruce, go ahead.
Thanks, Mason. So I was just going to suggest perhaps from a compliance point of view that you use two thresholds, one perhaps an absolute threshold and then the second a percentage threshold, because as Jeff pointed out, you could have a registrar with 1,000 registrations and 990 have got complaints on them. I think you need to look at that. And then obviously if you're dealing with a large registrar and it's got 10% of complaints, there's a big win. If you can get that 10% down to 8%, then obviously you benefit a lot of registrants. So just sort of consider the two thresholds, because my concern, like Jeff's, would be is that you have a lot of stuff that's under the radar and they're not incurring the costs of going through audits that the bigger guys are having to put up with.
Okay, we'll certainly take that on board and take into account. Thanks, Bruce.
All right, Bruce, thank you. Michaela.
I'm going to sound a bit like, I'm just going to echo pretty much what Bruce was saying. The data that David Giza shared with the IRTP working group clearly showed that some of the smaller registrars would not fit into any of the criteria that you have outlined here for your transfer audit, because some of these registrars would only have received two complaints, yet they only have 99 domains on their accreditation. So as a percentage of the total number of domains in their accreditation, they have a disproportionately high number of complaints, whereas companies like GoDaddy and Enom, who have several million domains, are obviously going to have a higher number of complaints, but as a percentage of their total volume of registrations, it's almost impossible to map that to a percentage, because you end up with a stupid number of decimal points. Much as I love to see my competitors suffering, I don't think it's fair of them. The other thing which I just wanted to raise you very quickly is you referred to the RAA stuff earlier on. I think you possibly misunderstood what we were talking about in terms of the tools within compliance. That wasn't really to do directly with law enforcement. It was more to do with other things on the RAA wish list, not specifically the law enforcement points. Thanks.
Thanks, Michaela.
Okay, Michaela, thank you. Pam, are you ready for your next question, or did you want to address Michaela?
Yeah, I think the point's been made plenty already. I just think from a compliance perspective, that's just not going to work. You know, it needs to be to scale, and I think it's been made clear already. Moreover, though, if you're doing it three times in 2010, you're going to go see the same three guys three times, or same five guys three times. So I think it's the point's already been made.
Okay, thanks very much, Matt. All right, Jeff, and this will be the last question for Pam, please.
Okay, thanks. What I wanted to bring up was, first off, Pam, thanks for coming in and running through the gauntlet here. It's always tough. This is always an issue. You know, all the issues of compliance are always tough, near and dear for registrars. One of the things I would give a suggestion is, we heard, for those of us who sat in the GAC meeting, we heard some very, discouraging things being said by law enforcement to the GAC, and kind of felt it was one-sided, and they didn't hear about all the registrars who were terminated for cause and all the work that the compliance team was doing. And they had only heard this one side of the issue. And what I would encourage you is for compliance to speak, if you can, with the GAC more and tell them all the work that you're doing and enforcing the RAA and all those pieces, so it doesn't seem that registrars are bad, ICANN staff is doing nothing, and law enforcement needs to take over, because we have a process in place and it's being used, and I suggest to let everyone know that compliance is working on these issues and bad actors are being taken out.
Yeah, point well taken, Jeff. Thanks for that comment. And I agree. I think most registrars that are on board in terms of what compliance is doing are very supportive. And there's only a very minority of a number of registrars that are problematic. And I do appreciate, and just as a maybe if I could, a closing remark, that compliance is a cost to business, to registrars' business. We are sensitive to that. We're trying to keep that to the minimum. I think if everyone all does the right thing, then it will probably be all life will be a lot easier for everyone. But unfortunately, there are people who are not playing by the rules, so we do need to get rid of those bad actors. But we do appreciate those who try very hard to be compliant, and we will be trying to minimize your cost and burden efforts to comply with all these obligations.
All right. All right, Jeff, thanks for that question. Pam, thank you very much for joining us today. Appreciate your time, as always.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so we're getting close on the agenda here, folks. If I can call on Tim to go ahead and begin. From here, we're going to do the registrar liaison session, and then we'll have to take a short break while the registrar is here and rest and go and reconnect to this Adobe meeting room with the registries down the hall. So, Tim, if you're ready, go ahead.
Okay. Thanks, Mason. excuse me. I really only have two dot points. I'm not quite sure how RA amendments got under my name as well as like two or three other people already today, but I don't have anything to add about the RA amendments at this time. So, and I know that we are running up against some time limits, so I'll be pretty brief here. I wanted to talk about basically two upcoming things, and one is the registrar training program. As you, I think all of you should have received both a fairly extensive outline document from Mike Zupke, as well as meeting information about a meeting that will be taking place day after tomorrow, 4 o'clock Nairobi time, and that we'll have Adobe Connect. I don't know that we'll actually have cameras, but we will have Adobe Connect with PowerPoint and the ability for people to both participate remotely and locally with regard to questions and discussions. You may recall that the new section 3.13 in the 2009 RAA has a requirement that ICANN develop a registrar training program in consultation with the registrars. So we started that consultation with a meeting in Seoul, and then we've continued through some email and other exchanges with McKaylee and others who have both offered us a lot of helpful information, as well as many people have put us in touch with other people in the community that have training ideas or programs that we've been able to take a look at. We are working on both the content but also the delivery mechanism, and both of those things are topics that we would like to discuss on Thursday. And I'm truly hoping that we can get people to participate here, because I've got staff people who are also staying up all night to participate in these things so remotely. So I would hate to keep them up and then have nobody show up. So I'm encouraging you to come on Thursday for that. People have we have put a lot of work into this program. The community already has helped quite a bit, but we'll go over our potential timeline and material. We kind of want to get a feel from you whether we're trying to cover too much, too little, what sort of time commitments you think people should be required to make for this training program, several those kinds of things. So we will also have consultations after this meeting. If it seems necessary and appropriate, we can also do conference calls down the road and so forth. But we had made a commitment to continue the consultation at this meeting, and that's our intent. First of all, are there any questions on that topic? We're really going to cover it Thursday, but I'll be glad to take questions now.
Okay. Anyone?
Okay. The other item I wanted to mention is regional meetings. We have consulted with the registry. Craig has consulted with the registries, and I have sent out some requests for feedback from you, from this group. We didn't get a lot of feedback, but basically what we are hearing is that registrars in their given regions really appreciate and want these regional events to continue happening. In many instances, registrars send people that don't come to the big ICANN meetings, and so we found that really valuable to them. However, the registries are finding it to be fairly costly for them, because they feel the need to and the obligation to attend all of the regional events wherever they're held, whereas the registrars tend to only attend in their region. So based on that feedback, we will probably continue these regional events, but they may end up having more of a registrar focus, and the registry attendants will be they will always be welcome, but there may be less of it than there has been in the past. We're not sure yet how that will actually work out. But having said that, we also got feedback after the Toronto meeting that registrars that aren't necessarily from the region want to know when other regional ones are happening because they may want to attend, or it may be appropriate, or the topics that are being covered may be of interest to them. So we're expecting to most likely open the information about these. Well, we definitely will open the information about each regional one to the entire registrar group so that people can choose whether they want to attend anywhere outside of their own region. And in addition to that, we will also probably use a more robust remote participation mechanism also for those events. So that's just sort of an update on the regionals. We have tentatively planned one for the 15th and 16th of April in Hong Kong, but we have run into a brick wall with regard to venue options. So it's possible that we may have to postpone that for a little bit, and we'll keep you posted as soon as we know more about that. So that's pretty much it about the regionals. And finally, I just wanted to mention, I don't know if people realize, but Steve Goban, Mike Zupke, and Brian Peck have been online for the entire meeting. For some of them, the time zone is more comfortable than others, but I just want you to be aware that your regional liaison staff is all paying attention. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Tim, and thanks to Brian and Mike and Stephen for participating as well. I know that Stefan wanted in the queue, so Stefan, go ahead.
Thanks, Mason. Tim, you were asking for feedback. I just wanted to give some personal feedback. I don't recall when we actually discussed this on the list, so I'm sure this has been said before, but I found that the regional meetings offer a really invaluable opportunity for outreach. The reason I got involved with the stakeholder group in the first place was that I attended one of the regional meetings and John Nevitt talked to me about it. So I think it really is a good way of getting more registrars on board, making sure they understand what's going on in ICANN, and we all know how difficult it is to understand what's going on in this, you know, in this community when you're outside of this community. And it's also a great chance for us all to meet in a less formal and slightly more peaceful environment sometimes, you know, less stressful. So I'm certainly all for them. I don't know that I don't know if there's a suggestion of doing that, but I'm not sure I'd be in favor of making all the regional meetings, you know, everybody goes to all, like the registries are doing. But I don't. There's not necessarily any reason to do that. The regional format seems to be working.
All right. Thank you, Stefan. Any other questions for Tim?
Mason, while you're looking for people to ask questions, I did have a little more information on this meeting on Thursday. I kind of neglected to mention it. I believe Mason has sent out an email to all of you, but just in case, the meeting is going to take place physically, and it's important for the people remotely to know this too because it also applies to the Adobe Connect. It's going to be taking place in the room called Tafia, which, if you don't know, it is one of the most obscure rooms in this building. It is under the stairway between the gents and the ladies' washrooms on this level, or up a half a level from where we are now. This meeting, because it is intended simply be staff soliciting participation from the registrars, has not been posted on the main meeting agenda. But that room has its own Adobe Connect link, just as this one does. That we're in now, we're in Aberdeer now, and so if you were to go on to the main ICANN meeting schedule and look for the room marked Tafia, and you could click on any meeting that was held in that room and click on the Adobe Connect link there, and that will bring you into the Adobe link for our meeting on Thursday. If need be, we can send all of that information out again. I don't know. Mason, did you already pass this on to everyone?
I passed on the note about the training. I don't know if, about the training session. I don't know if I did. I don't know if I had a link in it or not. If not, if you want to send it to me, I'll be glad to send it out to everybody.
All right, I will do that, and I can also post it here on the chat in a moment.
That'd be great.
It may be
okay.
Typho.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Frederick has a question.
Hi. I was just wondering regarding original meetings. Did you ever consider doing that? With other registries, like read things?
I can't even hear you in the room. Can you? I'm not sure what's causing the feedback.
Have
somebody's
you ever,
computer sound.
Is fine. Have you
Frederick,
ever
go
considered
ahead,
doing these meetings, regional meetings, with other registries? Maybe because I know some registries have regional meetings. I mean, they meet their registrars. Is it something ICANN would consider at one point to work with registries to team up so that you can just send one person in one location to have one information or two information? Am I clear?
I'm not sure what registries. Are you referring to country code registries?
Yes.
Because all of the generic top-level registries are invited to every one of these, and they choose whether or not to send representatives. We have not historically included CCTLDs because ICANN does not have a contractual relationship with them, and we consider this primarily a session that is closed exclusively to the registrars and registries that have a contractual relationship with ICANN. If people feel that there would be significant benefit to having additional TLDs present or invited to maybe attend a social event or something conjunction with it, we certainly could entertain that, and we would if you want to provide that feedback, that would be helpful. But we have found it's a little tricky to know where to draw the line because once one CC asks if they can attend, then we have two dozen that want to attend, and unfortunately, we're using your money to pay for this, and it gets to be a little cost prohibitive if we end up having to, support the attendance of all of those. And I don't mean attendance by their travel, but meals, et cetera, at these events.
Okay, thank you, Frederick. We have Matt and JC in the queue. Matt?
Yeah, I, like Stefan, find the regional events invaluable, and I think we should continue with them. The one comment was you mentioned remote participation. I think it would be great to, rather than spend that budget on remote participation in the event that's a regional meeting, to spend it on either full or partial translation for the immediate local languages of that region.
And in fact, our last Asia-Pacific meeting, we had all of the presentations were translated into Japanese, Korean, and Chinese. And we would expect that to be the case again at this upcoming Asia-Pacific meeting.
All right. Thank you, Matt. JC?
Yeah, just a short point, Tim, on regional meeting. I'd like as well to show my support for them. As far as keeping it regional or opening to everyone, I think one important element is the schedule, the calendar. In previous occasions, the regional meeting were a really good way to have a meeting while waiting for the proper ICANN meeting to take place. For example, the Toronto meeting, what was happening in a rather crucial time where the community had no other opportunity to get together. So I don't know. I'm all for regional meeting in the sense that they can provide possibility for local people to attend, but I do think they should be announced or broadcasted a bit more so that a registrar from the other side of the world could attend if he were interested to know more about a topic at a particular time.
Okay, thank you, JC. Any other questions for Tim quickly, because we're going to get started with registries here shortly?
Matt.
I think he didn't clear it. Matt, are you back in the queue, or did you just not clear your hand there? Okay, I'll take that as a no. All right, so here's what we need to do for the next few minutes. The group here in Reston is going to move rooms and go join the registries and then dial back into this Adobe room. If you're already participating remotely, meaning you're somewhere other than Reston, just stay on the line, and we'll rejoin you shortly. So we'll plan on joining at 9 o'clock here locally, so it's 5 in the afternoon in Nairobi. So if everybody there will just take a short break, we'll be back in a bit.
Yeah, Mason, just can I reiterate, everybody on the phone or participating remotely, even though the people in Reston are changing rooms, we are not changing away from this Adobe Connect room.
Right, absolutely. Okay, thanks, everyone. We'll be right back with you in about 10 or 15 minutes.